Hi, hi. Today's guest is someone very special to me, not only as an artist, but as a human being. Marcel Simoneau is an accomplished actor, a dedicated teacher, and above all, a deeply present and generous soul. I had the privilege of learning from him during my time at the Lee Strasberg Theatre and Film Institute in New York, a place known worldwide for shaping actors through the powerful approach of method acting. Marcel doesn't just teach acting, he creates space. Space for authenticity, for vulnerability, for truth. He's also a father, and you can feel how much he cares about growth, not only in his students, but in life itself. His son is already following in his footsteps, stepping into the world of acting with the same spirit. Marcel has appeared on TV in The Blacklist, Gotham, Unbreakable, Kimmy Schmidt, Fringe, Law and Order, and others, and he also has done extensive voiceover work in commercials like Budweiser, and he's a great singer. The name of his project is Potterfield. For me, what was fascinating is how close method acting is to resilience training, to emotional regulation, and to inner balance. Because in both worlds, the question is the same. How do we stay real under pressure? Today we explore exactly that. Welcome, Marcel. Nice to have you here.
Oh, so great to be here. Thank you for that beautiful intro. It's so thoughtful and touching. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. So let's start.
Yes.
Marcel, before we dive into method acting, who are you today as a human being beyond acting?
As who am I today as a human being? That's a very good question. I mean, I'm a father. I'm an actor. I'm also, you know, a Canadian, French-Canadian that's been in New York for like, I guess, 25 years. I've been longer here than there. I'm still Canadian, but also American. But I am someone that's curious, and I try to, I don't know. You brought up these nice qualities about me, and I'm like, oh, this is nice. But I guess I'm the oldest of 9 kids, so there's an element of me that has this older brother mentality, which comes into my teaching, which also comes into with my son, I guess. So all in all, I'm an actor that writes and directs and creates stories. I like to do music, and then I also teach, and then I play basketball or soccer with my son. Is a lot of what I do during the day.
Yes, that's much. And I played also basketball. I was basketball referee.
Oh, nice.
Yes, and many American people are much discipline, because every time I did a call, they say, "Yes, sir." And the German people were angry and told me that I'm wrong. But the American people just say, "Yes, sir. Thank you." And they played their game and they win.
Yeah,
that's a great sport.
Nice.
Yes, there are many myths about method acting.
Yes.
How would you explain it in a simple and honest way?
In a simple and honest way, there's a lot of misconceptions, and it's an easy name to kind of throw under the bus. Do you know what I mean? A lot of people are like, oh, that's method. But a lot of times it's not. It's just because it has a name. You know, there's Meisner, there's Adler, there's Grotowski. There's a lot of different techniques, but method is the one that gets more negative press, even though, I mean, it also gets the most, I think, positive press too. But method acting to me is really, at the beginning, is searching through your past and your experiences and present, and through incidents and people and things through your senses, like your 5 senses. You explore and to see how you really feel about these events, who you are and what your point of view is. So when you do these exercises, it A, develops your concentration, B, allows you to feel, and then allows you to express, and then to see more truthfully how you feel about these things, so you have better ingredients to cook up a story with. So it's very personal, so it can sound vague, but really what it is diving into your subconscious and bringing up your true feelings to the surface to then use those true feelings to tell a story.
Okay, let's see what, yeah, it's difficult. What is happening internally when someone truly acts in method acting?
Well, when you're truly method, a lot of it is training. Do you know what I mean? A big part of it is you are exploring and allowing your body to do that. So you're going to the gym. to allow your body to explore, to concentrate, and to feel so that you could then tell a story. Because the more you do it, the more it becomes ingrained in your instrument. This technique becomes, when you first cook a recipe, you really look at the recipe. Do you know what I mean? But later, you know that meal, so you just cook it. So there's an element of it, the method part of it is good for the training, but then when you actually put it in practice, some of it is already there. So a lot of the times, like for example, when you start off, you're doing a scene where there's sun and you're breaking up with your partner. So you might do an object of your partner and remember those feelings, and then you remember the sun. So when they put you on a stage with an actor you don't know, and it's cold and it's freezing and there's no sun, you can feel those feelings again and express them, more importantly, because you've experienced that before. Obviously, there's understanding things you've experienced before, but then we can add empathy and then imagination. So it's a lot to explain and to kind of dilute in 1 second. But the way to explore it is like, because there's a lot of different exercises, but a lot of times it's just putting yourself in the situation yourself, and then to see what you need to do to you to match the behavior of the character. Like sometimes I'll be teaching someone and they'll be like, "Oh, I would never do that." I'm like, "Okay, good. What do you need to do to you to do that?" Meaning what you need to do in the scene, So it's a lot of the method stuff is searching in yourself to see what your response would be, and then what you need to add to that. So maybe your character needs to be more angry, so you might add some things in your life that make you angry, like either a person or a song or a place or a weather condition, and some things that can, oh, okay, that starts stirring up. I use cooking a lot as an analogy. So method is finding ingredients so that you can cook more authentic recipes. So if there's a scene you need to tell someone not nice words, you might remember a moment like, oh yeah, that person, and then you explore that person, and then it's easier to release those words because I'm telling that person something as opposed to this actor I just met 30 minutes ago. Does that make sense?
Yes, makes sense.
Yeah.
Method acting seems deeply connected to emotional awareness.
Oh yeah.
Where's the line? But where's the line between using emotions, and you always have to learn to use emotions, and being overwhelmed by them?
That's a good question. I mean, well, part of the training is knowing, okay, where the character starts and where you finish. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes there's a little bit of gray area, but because you're doing a relaxation and you're allowing yourself to go to that place, and your body knows that you're acting. Do you know what I mean? Like you have to hit a mark. You have to say the lines that way because the camera's there. Like there's certain technicalities. You want to lose yourself to be able to feel that it is real. And it is in that moment. But if a light falls from the sky, you're going to move out of the way. Do you mean like there's an element that you're still, this is a small percentage of you're aiming for 100%, but there's also a small percentage of you that knows and your body is allowing itself to feel fully because it knows that you're going to go get a cup of coffee right after. And, like there's an element of it where in the research, you can stir up real emotions. Yes. And they might, be therapeutic. And you might be like, oh, I should call my uncle. Like you might discover some things in your own life, as you would in any job in art form. But there is, you start, I think personally, you have to go over the line to know where the line is. So sometimes when you're exploring at home and you're rehearsing, okay, I want to go up to here. So then when I go to set, I go to there, and there's no, I know when I'm acting, and I know when that I don't, that's for me. What's personal and what's for the public, if that makes sense. But through rehearsal and trying it, you find what that line is for you, and it's different for everyone. And it might also change. In the run of a play, you might decide, like, I don't want to use that anymore. I want to use something else. Or it might, I did a play for 1.5 years, and there was one thing I was using sensorially, and it started not working as much. So I had to, put more salt and recook that little section. And then the next night it was okay. That
So
makes sense.
it's like step by step to get in balance between to think something and to feel something. Step by step, little by little.
Yeah, I mean, it's an exercise of breathing and relaxing and being in the present, like kind of meditation, but meditation, you want to let go of how you feel. And relaxation with the method specifically, you want to embrace how you feel and see how you feel today. Okay, I sound like this today. And then you go searching for little things that are going to make you happy or angry, you know, for lack of a better, to then be able to use that for the scene. And obviously there's physical adjustments and all that kind of stuff, but you remember these tools, these ingredients that you have. I think of it as a supermarket. You know, you go into your supermarket of life, of your past, of what makes you you, and you discover things about yourself. Like abandonment, injustice, loss, whatever those things might be for you. And then you're able to use those ingredients if you practice them and rehearse them so you know how to cook them well and under pressure from a student film to a Broadway show to a big network TV show, because there's other relaxation and things involved there. Your ingredients need to be very specific to then be able to, you know, say the lines that they give you that day, you know. So it's a lot of it's it sounds really abstract. And it is at the beginning, but over the years it becomes really simple. You really simplify what it is you're allowing your body to do, because a lot of it is training and just figuring out this technique. But once you do it, you just do it. What's the story? Who am I talking to? What do I want? What's my character? What are my physical adjustments? And then you just kind of go for it. You just try and then see, like, oh, that's too much. Oh, that's too mean. That's right. And then you feel that that tastes good. And that you run with that. I use cooking a lot, sorry, as an analogy.
Yes, I understand it like you have to get a good focus,
Oh, yes.
not relax too much, but have empathy and learn to have empathy because not everyone feels, but not everyone has empathy.
Yes.
What kind of empathy do you have? In a scale 0 to 10, or how do you learn to have more empathy, to be more reflected in these
I mean,
situations?
I think as an actor, you need like 0 to 10, you need like 15. Like, you just need a lot of empathy because you have to, because sometimes you play characters that are not nice. Do you know what I mean? Like, I played someone in August who was this tough guy from the Bronx, and I had to kill 12 people in this series. Do you know what I mean? So it's, how do I put myself on the side of the character? So you have to empathize with that. Because to me, acting is understanding, empathy, and then imagination. So you can understand things. Like, I understand loss. So my grandfather's sick. So I can do the scene and be like, hey, are you okay? Like, because I understand what that feeling is. I could imagine something happening to my son. And then it's really easy for me because that seed of truth is very strong for me. But then empathy is a harder one, to really like put yourself in someone else's shoes. It's really difficult. Do you know, like, you might, and that's just something I think as an actor you have to have. Because not just because of these characters that are despicable necessarily, but just you have to see, like, why would my character do that? Where are they coming from? Where are they going? What do they want? So it's really, there's a lot of psychology to it and really understanding human behavior to then be able to express it, sometimes more expressively than it maybe was in life, because art is more expressive than life, so that we can really understand and feel or question or take in that story. So I think at 15, 0 to 10, you need like empathy. Because, I mean, to me, that's really like the focus and the concentration, obviously, is important. But empathy to me is really important. So it can really understand human behavior, because then you can understand the story. Because our job is to, you know, feeling is one thing and acting, it's important because it helps you tell the story. But the story is what's really more important. And I find empathy is useful for both.
And it's very deep. In Germany, the last time we spoke about method acting, it was as Heath Ledger died few years ago. But in this time, method acting was big in Germany because Heath Ledger did this also as tool. He used it as tool, and that was not such a good situation to speak about method acting, you know?
It's tricky because I don't know exactly what he was working on. I know he immersed himself in the role and did an excellent job, and it was a fascinating, you know, part. But there's things like sometimes people, like, I don't know what his personal life is, and I really have no idea. But I do know that sometimes you can immerse yourself in a part and really get into it. Do you know what I mean? And that's normal. Like, I've read Crime and Punishment by Dostoevsky, and I was a little darker when I was reading this book, just reading it as a, because you're immersing yourself a little bit in that part. If you're playing Hamlet every night, you are, going through this deep question every night, But I do find that your endorphins and your, they come and mask that. Like sometimes on a really, really dramatic film, there's a lot of joking around to balance it. But there's a lot of stuff with method acting. Like, for example, people were like, when De Niro for Taxi Driver, everyone's like, he drove a cab for like a month to do the research of what it's like to
I
be the
read this,
cab.
yes.
Yeah. And everyone's like, oh, that's so method. And it's like, that's not method. That's just research. Like, you would normally should do that. Or like Daniel Day-Lewis, when he was doing Lincoln, he wanted people to call him Lincoln and he would still talk in the voice. And so, but that's just someone keeping their accent. Like if I'm doing a guy that's talking like this, I might want to keep the accent for the whole run because I want to make sure I don't lose the accent. So it's not me fully staying method in character. It's just me keeping the accent because he's being Lincoln and talking as Lincoln, but he's still talking on an iPhone. Do you know what I mean? Like, so do you know what I mean? It's like, so he is breaking character. He's just keeping the voice. So there's a lot of things sometimes that the method is exaggerated, I find, because it's a very specific technique where you go into your past and you bring these things. Sometimes you do stay in character a little bit, but sometimes it's just a physical adjustment or a mindset and things. And so, because people like, they're like, oh, they're losing themselves in their parts and stuff like that. They are in the moment. And we see that scene with the sound effects and all that kind of stuff. So it looks like a different person. And it is in that moment. But they go back to a trailer and they take off their makeup and they get in their car and they drive, like they go to McDonald's or whatever, like they do normal stuff, Maybe not McDonald's, but you know what I mean? Like they, you know.
It's all about balance in it,
Yeah.
no?
No, there's definitely a part where you do immerse yourself in a part. And sometimes if I'm playing a really dark part, like that particular part I was playing, it was in New Jersey on location. Like I wanted to just be in my zone. Like I didn't necessarily like that. Those 4 days, my son went with his mother. Do you know what I mean? Because I wanted to just be in my space to do these things, to focus and to be able to focus and to concentrate more and to stay a little bit more in that edgy area. But I went to restaurants and did some stuff. Like I wasn't walking around like ready
Kill
to
some
get
people.
exactly. Yeah. So but it is a. I think part of it is I always think of it as like there's a. Like in space movies, like there's always that little room where you go in and then you put on your space suit and then you go out there. So I always think of acting like that and the relaxation of method, which you've experienced is you get into the chair and then you go to this safe place to play. So for me, a lot of times it's like costume. Like once I start putting on the boots, then I get into that place where I have these associations that start happening. I'm like, okay, now that's where we're going. And then when I take off the costume, then I'm back to me,
It's like a physical anchor, isn't it?
Yeah.
Like that, no? You wear the
Yeah.
hat and then you are the other person.
Yeah, because it's a way to give yourself permission to be this other person or to be parts of you more expressively or to focus on a certain time in your life or an aspect of yourself. Do you know? Like, I'm very grumpy if I don't eat. Do you know what I mean? So obviously I'm not walking around like that all the time, but if I just focus on that character and I'm just this guy that's just like, like that could be a really interesting energy I have for a character.
It's
But
like an identity shift.
yeah.
If I wear my suit, I am the lawyer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, that's a
And
lot.
now we talk about the lawyer, and that's why the next question maybe is a good one. For the listeners, if we transfer method acting into business or into negotiation, I think you also have to negotiate many things.
Oh yeah.
What can leaders learn from it?
I think, well, it's interesting to come back to empathy. There's like, where is your client coming from? Do you know, like, what do they really want? Like, I remember when we were doing your class, there was a lot of people doing like, there were TED Talks and different things. And, and then someone I asked them, like, what do you want? It's like, I want them to buy the product. And I was like, yeah, but you can't say that. Do you know, like, there's an element of like, you change. There's a lot of different things. Like, to me, I remember with you guys, it was like, who are you? Who are you talking to? What do you want? So that to me were three anchors that I modified for you guys' class because we're not like crying and you're not gonna have an emotional memory to sell something necessarily. Well, depending on how much you need to sell it, but there's an element of it where to me it's like I'm an expert in the field or I'm an older brother with some advice or I'm someone that's discovered a secret. Like there's these kind of like hats you can put on that, okay, this is my character. Who you're talking to is interesting. Like if I talk to my sister, I talk to her, my little sister, like this. If I talk to my boss, I talk to her. So it depends who you're talking to. If I talk to my best friend, I'm like Windex, it's like a cleaning product here. Like if I'm just talking, I'm like Windex, it's blue. It cleans stuff. Like you see me trying to sell you something. But if I'm talking to my buddy and I'm like, dude, Windex, it's blue. It really cleans stuff. Like it's more personal of who I'm talking to. So it's an exercise we call personalization or substitution. So who you are, who you're talking to, and then what do you want? You know, because obviously you want them to buy the product, but really, if you go deeper, you want them to trust you. You know, you want them to feel like, if, say, it's investment banking or something like that, you want to make them feel safe. This is the most money they've ever spent on something. So you want to make them feel like, hey, I got you. Don't worry. Like there's an element of like if you change your objective in business, to me, again, I don't know. Like it would be like who you are, you know, an older brother with advice or someone in the field, or like I'm a guy that knows what's going on with pickup trucks. You know, like there's an element of what you can be and then who you're talking to, and then what you want. But if you make it like a deeper objective of what they would want, you know, by using empathy and thinking like, you know, if you're selling a mortgage or if you're selling, I don't know, whatever like the transaction might be, like there's an element of like if you put yourself in their shoes, what do they want? You know? No, I'm just thinking like because I do a lot of voiceovers and sometimes it'll be like, you know, it'll be a Ford F-150, like real American trucks, you know, be like that kind of guy. So you want a guy that's not these trucks are the best. You don't want someone talking down to you. You want someone that you can have a beer with. You know what I mean? So there's an element of like who you're talking to is to make them, I'm one of you guys. Do you know what I mean? There's an element there. Or if you're in investment banking or finance or mortgages and stuff like that, like I want someone I can trust. I want someone that knows what they're doing, that's confident, that makes me feel safe, you know. But then if it's like a teenage thing, like an Axe deodorant or whatever, like my son, he's almost a teenager now. I was like, you want to be cool, you know, like Red Bull, like you know, like you have these kind of like things that you want to, you know. So it depends on try to empathize and see what the client wants, and then make them feel like that. Make them. I mean, a lot of it is trust, I think.
So in Germany we say it's a Parasprache. So how
Yeah.
we say something, not what we say,
Yeah.
how we say it.
Yeah, that
So
would be
it
yeah.
makes a difference between life and death if we say let's eat dad or let's eat dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in this situation it's cool because you answered the question I didn't ask. The question is acting about being someone else or becoming more yourself. I think,
Yeah.
like what you say, what you said, it's like more becoming more yourself.
Yes, because I remember when I first came here, my friends from Canada were like, "Don't you lose yourself?" I was like, "No, I feel like I know myself better." So, because if it's a scene where I need to experience loss, I have experienced the loss and I remember that feeling. So I know that feeling of myself. Empathy, same thing. And then imagination, same thing. Like, and I would that film where I had to, you know, be mean to a bunch of people, I would just imagine them being mean to my son, and then I'll be mean to everyone in the movie because that means a lot to me. So it's that part of myself that I'm bringing to the table. Obviously, with an accent and a costume and all that stuff. But there's a, I find like you lean into parts of yourself. Like if I imagine a scenario, I'm going to imagine something that means a lot to me, like something positive or negative happening to people that I really care. Like your seeds of truth that you're imagining with are very strong to you. So you use parts of yourself, like me being hungry. Do you know what I mean? That's me being hungry. Obviously, maybe with a space suit and you know what I mean, and some funny accent. Like there's an element of it, like the core of it is has to be personal, has to be from you.
So you don't give something away, you get more with the new identity.
Yeah. You lean into one aspect of yourself or a time in your life or an event in your life or something in you that you now can understand and recreate, really.
Yeah. So, but what are practical ways to train emotional availability and presence?
The ways of doing that, it's, I mean, it's, you know, the program normally is like a 2-year program, but sometimes you can access things faster where there's concentration, obviously. You know, like really relaxing, allowing yourself to be focused on that specific thing. So, you know, if you want to just do a simple exercise of like talking to someone and make them trust you, like I would just imagine talking to my father or talking to my friend. Like I use that example, like if I talk to my boss, I'll straighten up and I'll talk to them, make sure they feel like everything is okay, make them feel safe, make them feel trusted. I got this. But if I talk to my sister, I'm gonna make sure she's okay and everything is okay because she's younger and whatever. But it's interesting because you can change those relationships because I could talk to my boss like I talk to my sister, and then it's really condescending. Do you know what I mean? Like it
That's true.
becomes like, so it's just like, so that's just an, you try to see, you imagine this person in front of you. That person's not gonna magically appear. But through these exercises, for example, a substitution where you just imagine that other person there, which it kind of channels the way you speak to them because of the relationship. You can then add what's called a personal animated object, which is touching and imagining that person there. So if I touch like my mother's hand, it makes me feel a certain way. I've also trained for a while and been practicing, so it's easy for me to access these things because my body's like, oh yeah, and it allows me to express that in a relaxed fashion. Like I could imagine a scenario of something tragic happening to my son and start crying in 7 seconds, because well, that's my job, but there's an element of it that quickly, like just jumping in without doing training, I guess. That's an interesting one for me. Like again, I come back to who are you? Who are you talking to, and what do you want? And those are things in terms of the exercises. Sometimes it could just be like imagining sunshine. Like if I imagine a certain sun on my face, on my hand, and you start, it's called an overall sensation. So I just imagine myself completely a sun that I know. I'm in this room. But I'm imagining the sun. And for me, I talk fast. I drink a lot of coffee. My mind is always racing. But if I do sunshine, I slow down a little bit. And then my character becomes a little bit more warm and mellow and, kind of more relaxed. So it's just, it's just,
I
so
would
what you're
like
doing, I'm
to
just
take a
imagining.
deep breath
Yeah.
since
You
you
just,
talk about the sunshine.
because you imagine sunshine. It sounds silly, but it's being specific, like on all these different parts of your body, a specific sun that you experienced before. And that becomes a physical change that you're holding on to. It's like like the way I see it is like something to believe in, like something to hold on to. So you feed what I call your actor's faith. Because if you believe it, then I believe it. If I'm really under the sun and I believe that I'm there, and it'll start expressing itself, and you'll be like, oh, why is Marcel so mellow today? I guess he's not excited to see, you know what I mean?
Yes, it makes a difference in this situation. And in the real situation, in the business situation, if I understand you right, it's also good in stressful situations, if you have much pressure, maybe to think on the sunshine, take a deep breath, calm down, and then the situation is another situation than before, and you are more chilled or something like that.
Or music is another one too. Like music can really put you into a mood. Sometimes you could listen to music or before you go on stage or to your meeting or whatever. It can be an empowering thing. It can be a relaxing thing. So sometimes music, listening to real music or sensorially, like imagining a song, can also help you put you in a specific mood. Because I listen to old like 90s hip hop and I walk around thinking I'm tougher than I am. So that could give me a mood that I might need for this presentation, or something more calming, or something more confidence building. Do you know what I mean? Before you enter the room. I had a film where I would do that. I was uptown and I would take the train for half an hour every day and I would listen to the specific soundtrack all the way to the train. So when I got to set, I was in this kind of mood. So it could be, you could easily do that for anything, really.
It's a somatic thing, isn't it?
It's really, you get, it's a rhythm, and obviously memories and stuff are associated to music too, that can help put you in a specific mind frame.
When I'm speaker, I jump behind the stage, backstage. I'm jumping, and some people have a little, in Germany we say trampoline. And they are jumping there or pump their fists, that they have more energy, more pressure in it, and more enthusiasmos, something like that.
I mean, it changes too. I used to do Tai Chi, you do relaxation. It depends on the parts too. Sometimes you just go do it because you've been doing it for a while, but sometimes it's like, okay, this one is a more emotional scene. I want to really focus. Like I was working on Law and Order with this actress, and she was on the stand. She was the killer of the episode. So, that day she was with her headphones and she was in a zone, and I didn't bother her because I knew the scene she had to go do. I'm her husband, so I just have to be supportive in this scene. So I knew that she was going to this place, and I respected that space. So everyone, I think for every scene or every part or everything that you do, it can change a little bit this preparation depending on what you need once the lights are on. You know what I mean?
What did teaching acting teach you about humans?
Wow.
Sorry for
That's a good one.
that
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting thing because it really brings up to me in art forms like, is man good or evil? Do you know what I mean? Like it brings up to me is the first question I think about because you start thinking of everyone's intentions. Do you know? And then sometimes a lot of characters, a lot of times someone that does something nice and good as a good person is not as entertaining as, say, the Penguin. Do you know? Like, you know what I mean? Like there's we do focus a lot, I think, on behavior that's not us. Do you know what I mean? There's not ever a lot of books about, manic depressive disorder and schizophrenia. Like there's, because those are the fun characters to play. So, keeping in mind that those are small portions of the population. But I guess what I learned really is I think everyone wants to be seen and loved and heard. And I think a lot of these things individually, we don't know what people are actually all individually going through. So for me, it developed this empathy of where people are coming from. In the moment, you're like, but then if you take a second to see where they're coming from, you're like, oh, that makes sense that they would be grumpy like that. Like I have someone in my life now, she's this older woman she's not a nice person, but she just went through knee surgery. She just went through this. She just went through all these things. So it's like, if you take a second, I'd be worse. I'd be grumpier than she is. So for me, I guess it's deepened, I think, the psychology, because I studied psychology too before. Whereas I guess to answer your question would be like where people are coming from and empathizing with them more, and that a lot of people just want to, be loved and be hugged and be understood. And it's sometimes people take pride in their careers. Sometimes they take pride in their looks. Sometimes they take pride in their material possessions. Sometimes they take pride in their kids. It's like you start seeing what makes people who they are, So, because you always try as an actor, you want to come back down to the essence of what the super objective of the scene might be. And a lot of them is to be understood, to be seen. And then you start getting into childhood trauma of why they want to be seen, why they want to show that they have money because they didn't young, and like all these things. So I guess, yeah, it's deepened my experience of the human observation, but to me, I guess it's developed my empathy. I never really thought about it, but I think it really deepens, I think, hopefully, and I'm not saying I do this all the time. Do you know what I mean? If someone does something to me on the street and they bump into me and they're grumpy, I'm not going to be like, I see where you're coming from. Like, no, I'm going to probably bump them back. But do you know what I mean? There's an element of it where sometimes if you have the time and the empathy to do it, it helps, seeing where people are coming from.
So if you teach other people, it's always a practice for you to reflect what you see and to put it in your individual toolbox.
Oh yeah, I learned a lot from teaching. Oh yeah, like why people behave a certain way, and then it also helps my acting tremendously. And it's also very, I don't know. It's because I do it. I don't fully full-time do it because I'm busy with my own stuff, which I think helps me really appreciate it more. Like I'm going to teach tonight and I'm excited. Like there's an element of like there's a few people in class that are, this one needs to be pushed that way. This one is opening up that way. This one is resisting. And you start seeing, but there's always every time I leave class, I always leave inspired because there's something, personal happening.
Cool.
And so, I learn a lot from the students for sure.
So, two more questions.
Sure.
The first one is, do you have one or two stories? What were your toughest negotiation moments in the film industry? Many.
Do you mean on a creative level or financial level or
On a funny level, maybe.
on a funny level? Yeah.
What was wrong? What was good? And what do you learn from it? Because I think it's a very, very hard business,
Yes.
and it's very difficult for most actors to difference between I am an actor and I am the businessman that I can act.
Yes, you're very, very correct. And that's a lot of things because, sometimes you're an artist, but you're also running a business. And I think that to me, I tell students, like, that's the crux of your career is balancing business and art. Because you could be the most amazing actor in the world, but if no one's ever seen you, who cares? Do you know what I mean? Like, you have to be, like, I'm an amazing singer in my shower. Do you know what I mean? Like, but like, you have to put it out there. You have to present yourself. You have to, sometimes. I think you've got to be tasteful about it and not be pushy, but know when to. There's a time to be modest and there's a time to present, But I think, I mean, negotiation-wise, that's an interesting because there's a lot. It's like over the years, there's so many things that have happened. Like I've had some disagreements. As the thing is, it's like as long as you have to tell the same story. Do you know? I had this one director who I won't mention, but like we got to like I was the lead of the film, and we were together for 7 weeks. It was a feature film, and it was tough. And I was really not agreeing with one of the things he was saying. And then he was like, "Say it like that," like while we were shooting. I'm like, "No," and like I really pushed back, which is unprofessional. But I'd been working with him for 5 weeks. We rehearsed for three. We've been shooting. Like I was in a position where I'm not, an extra, so I could voice more of my opinion. And then so I was looking at Cameron, I was like, "Cut." And he was like, "You can't cut." I was like, "I'm cutting right now." Like we got into this petty argument. And then what was interesting is we took a second. We cut the camera, and then him and I went to another room of this location. And then we both really shared and talked. I was like, "I'm coming from this point of view." He's like, "Oh." I was like, "Well, I'm coming from this point of view." And I was like, "Oh, and so we really let it all out. I think part of it was releasing insecurities because it's his movie and I'm the lead and we're both feeling pressure. And I was 22 years old. Like it was a lot for me to take in. And I think it was his big first feature and like the money people were around that day. So there was a lot of things happening. But what was beautiful about it is that we needed that talk. Like we needed to both share where we were coming from. And after that, it was smooth sailing. We just needed to almost have that little confrontational moment there. So he saw how much I cared and I saw how much he cared. And it made me care more and it made him care more. And then after that, every night he would drive me home. And we that like we would drive me home from we were uptown all the way back to Williamsburg. And that was like a 40-minute, half an hour sometimes because it's late night.
Perfect to talk.
Yeah. And we did that for the remainder, like a month. And that's where we made the movie. Is those drives home. So there was an element where we needed to confront each other. And then because of I saw where he was coming from, then I was like, "Oh, okay." And then it your ego, the story is what's more important. And if we're both wanting to tell this better story, then you're safe to I always like I have a cinematographer friend of mine. It's like it's okay if I make a silly suggestion, like to have a stupid idea. Because he's going to take that idea. He's not going to be like, "What?" And then, he's going to be like, "Oh, no, but what if we, oh." So you need a safe place to be able to make these stupid ideas so that you can grow them into something better. It's like Matt Damon and Ben Affleck, they used to write together when they did Good Will Hunting, and they would talk about that. And they would say, like, "I felt safe with him to just do my stupid idea," because they knew that they would have something better later. So as soon as ego gets involved or you don't feel safe enough to try things, so there was an element of that. I don't know. So I'm branching off here. But for me, that was an interesting moment because after that, we never, like, we were just, him and I just were connected. And that's happened a few times. Like, I find sometimes in negotiations, I guess what I found as an actor, sometimes being the lead with the director, to not have this conversation in front of everyone.
Yeah, you negotiate the relationship
Yeah. But
and
you
the
don't do it in front of
perspectives.
everyone. Yeah. But you do it in private. Like I had another director, her and I went outside and we both smoked at the time and we had a cigarette together. And I was like, "Hey," and I was like, "Okay." And then she, "Oh, okay." And then after that, everything was fine. Because if you have that discussion in front of the crew and all the other actors, it's not as productive sometimes because ego gets involved faster. No
It's
one
a
wants to
social
admit.
process to take a cigarette, to smoke a
Yeah.
cigarette. It's always a social process. Yeah,
Yeah.
do this in a Aufzug, an elevator. Yeah, do this in
Ah.
an elevator with other people and begin to speak. That's cruel. But smoke a cigarette with them and they talk with you
Well, you're
about
one-on-one,
everything.
yeah. Yeah. I guess that would be my advice. Like sometimes I guess over the years, like never if you have those big discussions in private, then you're more willing to admit mistakes or be personal or be real or share where you're coming from, as opposed to this social stage where ego comes in and then it's not as productive, I find.
Yeah, but sometimes I think you have to have a good ego. Yeah, in Germany
Oh, yeah.
we have a sentence. It's wenn einer pfeift und der andere kommt, weiß ich, wer der Hund ist. I tried in English. If someone whistles and another one comes, I know who's the dog.
Interesting. Yeah.
So, do you are the dog or
Yeah.
not?
Yeah.
Yes, and yeah,
But that's it's
that's.
interesting, like, because everyone in a film set, which is like any business, office, whatever world, like everyone needs to know where they stand in the pyramid. Do
Yeah.
you know what I mean? Like, there's an element of it, like, without two dogs at the dog part, like who's the leader? You know what I mean? They once that role is settled, then we can proceed and move on. And it's an interesting thing. Because you might think you're here and I think you're there. And it's like it's an interesting dynamic. And I think all schooling and like everything. And it's an interesting dynamic.
Yes, and you have to be fast to get it in balance again.
Yeah.
It's again all about the balance
Yeah.
between people in the system, in your role, in your identity. And that's the difficult thing. And that's why
Yeah.
it's so important to be able to reflect.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Because sometimes it is like, okay, yeah, I am this, but what's your job? And to find that balance between both. Because some maybe because the recent one you were underappreciated, so you need more appreciation than this one. But like, hey, what's your role is actually that. So it's finding that balance, because you need. I think you do need to express that maybe you're undervalued in that previous one, but. Is it something to be done in the main meeting, or is it something to be done on the side? Or like, it's interesting, yeah. Because I mean, it's a case by case scenario, but balance. You're right. I think it's very much about that, and it's tough sometimes because feelings get involved, so it's harder to balance
It's tough.
sometimes.
Yes. Oh, yes, it's tough. So, my last question for today, if you had to give us your top three exercises to improve presence and performance, what would they be for the listeners outside?
I definitely, the first thing right off the bat to me would be relaxation, which is the relaxation is an exercise that it's the first thing you do. It's the most important thing to do, where you're aware of your body. Do you know, like you move your body and you see, like, okay, I'm a little tense here because I went to the gym yesterday. I'm a little tense here because of something I'm holding on to emotionally. So you're just basically moving every single part of your body slowly and checking your instrument. Like my jaw is a little tense and relax it. So allow your instrument to be relaxed. And I mean, it's easier said than done, but it's a lot of it is just really, it's just breathing, like being in the moment in the present, feel the cold air coming into your nose, the warm air coming out of your mouth and telling yourself it's going to be okay. Like, so relaxation to me would be number one, like really just
I
taking a
love it so
step
much
back.
what you say, check your instrument. That's
Yeah,
a
it
great
is.
sentence.
Because it's an interesting thing. Like if someone's twitching, do you know what I mean? Like I remember in our class, there was someone that like his leg kept like moving like that, and he looked like a bull that was about to attack. And I was like, "Do you realize your leg is doing that?" He's like, "What? Oh!" Like he wasn't aware of it. So you're expressing a certain character, a certain role, which is not what you want to express. So it's making sure you're in control or aware, I should say, of your instrument. If I'm biting my lip, like I want to be like, okay, I shouldn't bite my lip in front of the CEO. I should be more, like you should be aware of your instrument. Easier said than done, but also once you're performing, you want to make sure that like you're still relaxing while you're, during the performance or the meeting or whatever. So relaxation to me is a very important one. In terms of like, it's interesting. Like a Meisner exercise, because I teach Meisner as well. I'm trained in Meisner as well. And Meisner has this exercise, which is just the listening and responding. And so all it is like this, it's like, listen, like to me, like when I actually, it's interesting because there's a lot of exercises, but like to me, this is listening. If I tell someone before you go to an audition, the first thing I say is like, breathe, listen, and make a choice, or make a choice, breathe, and then listen. So I come in with this, I was like, I think the part's like this. And then they're like, but then I breathe. And then they're like, what if you did like this? And then listen, you mean, and then make another choice. You mean like this? And then breathe and then listen. So there's an element of like, so that relaxation would be like as an exercise of method or anything would be relaxation. Then the listening part to me, which comes from Meisner, is really important. Like right now, I see that you're smiling. Now you're leaning your head a little bit to the side. And now you know that I'm aware of that I'm looking at you. So you're like, okay, this is a little weird. I'm observing. You're like, there's an element of listening to the other person, of what they're giving you. Because I see that so much in any socially too.
That's
When
so
someone's,
cool. That's
you know.
so cool that you say that. And to the followers, we didn't coordinate this interview, but a few weeks ago, I had an interview with Gary Nesner, the former chief of the FBI's crisis negotiation unit,
Wow.
dealing with hostage situations. And he told me the most important thing is to first be a good listener. That doesn't mean you have to agree with it, but if you listen to people, they will appreciate as a friend, yeah, they will be more likely to work with you. And that's the same you tell from the actor's side, the actor's perspective, and he from the hostage situation.
That's so interesting.
That's
I mean,
cool.
hostage situations. Yeah, that's a wow. That's a but that would be a fun part to play. But there's an element of it where there's yeah, listening to me, like even in business or in acting, like because acting to me is not acting. Acting is reacting. Do you know what I mean? If I say I love you and the other person's like I love you too, you can't be like I love you. You have to be like what do you like? You have to really respond organically in the moment. But I think in business too, or in any social thing, like we don't listen enough. I think as a society, we get so excited about what we're going to say next. So I think there's a lot of strength, I think, in just breathing, and then taking in what this other person needs, what they want, who they are. And then they tend to share and be more personal or tell you what they need without telling you, and that can help you then adjust and deepen the relationship or whatever you're working on. So I mean, in terms of I guess breathe, listen. And then the other thing is like this is more for auditions and stuff like that, but making a choice or not being afraid of making a choice, it's not so much an exercise, but that's something I would recommend. And then, like, to get back to Strasbourg and to method stuff, like, there is this element, there's this an exercise called a personal animated object. So you imagine a person next to you. Do you know? So, like, if someone walks into a room, it might change my behavior. If I touch my mother's hands, it makes me feel a certain way. If I touch her face, I get really emotional. If I touch my son's head, it makes me feel like there's quick things, obviously through training and stuff like that. So there's a personal animated object. Or it could just be having a little object that means a lot to you. Do you know what I mean? Like someone gives something to you, you could have it in your pocket and it makes you feel more confident or whatever. I mean, there's a lot of these more like tricks, but I guess, to have those top three, I guess would be like definitely breathing and relaxation and then listening. But I like this idea of making a choice, like bring something to the table. Do you know what I mean? Like I always think of like have a pre-rehearsal, not just be like, so what are we working on today? No. Hey, we could work on this. No. Okay. But at least you came in with something. You thought about it. It's like I call it pre-rehearsal. So I guess those would be my three things.
For the business guys out there, to be patient. Take your time. I think you said this between the lines. Take your time.
Yeah, because I think your objective is interesting too in business. If I like, I used to own a bar, a few bars in Williamsburg, and it would be like some people, some reps, like whiskey reps. They would come in. We had like 400 whiskeys. It was a big, fun place. So I could tell when someone's trying to sell me something, and I didn't like that. Do you know what I mean? If someone trusts me, and like if they were pushy, if they're like, no, my boss, like I'd rather them be honest with me, and that's my thing. But I don't know. It's some if someone was like, if I felt like someone's trying to trick me, then I would lose trust. But if someone was like, hey, dude, I know you don't really sell wild turkey that much, but it would really help me out if you could take two cases. And I'll be like, All right, I'll take two cases. Like there was a, for me, I'm not saying I'm everyone, but for me, maybe from an actor owning a bar standpoint, there was an element like I just, the reps that I kept were the ones that I felt were honest and weren't trying to sell me something. But they were like, they are, we are in a position where I'm trying to sell you something, but at least they were honest about it or not trying to be like, you know what would be cool? I'm like, don't tell me what, you know what I mean? Like there's an element of it that was interesting. If I think of those kind of relationships, which is very much like a buyer seller kind of position. So I don't know. I just tend to go towards the people that were more that listened.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's
We
fun.
forgot one thing, one last wish. I saw you in Blacklist. You are a French Canadian,
Yes.
and you didn't talk with your French accent. So, auf Deutsch
Oh.
könnte ich auch etwas Französisch sprechen, mit einem deutsch-französischen Akzent. Ja, yeah,
Oh
Germany-French
yeah.
accent.
That's a German French accent.
But maybe you can say goodbye to all our listeners. With your great French accent, I heard in the Blacklist.
Yes, but the accent I was doing in the Blacklist is a French from France. So it's a little bit more specific because I'm from the French part of Canada. And in Canada, there's a little bit like my father, he speaks with a French Canadian accent, which is a little bit different. It's a little bit more French Canadian, Quebecois. But in France, it's a little bit more of a, it's just a different accent. You know, it's like British and Brooklyn. Well, maybe not Brooklyn, but there's an element of it that's slightly different. But I do a lot of those kind of voices. Like I do voices for Emily in Paris, and it's all the French accent like this. So I wanted to thank you for having me today for this podcast. It was very interesting to think about and
Yes, and now many
listening.
people in Germany knows you and can watch your next movies and hear your great music. I heard your
Oh,
music
thank you.
and
Oh, thank you.
your very deep voice as singer. It's very great. It sounds
Oh,
great
thank you so
and
much.
thank you so much for having
Thank
you
you.
with me and I wish you all the best in the
You too,
world
sir. Thank you so
and
much.
thank you very much.
All right. Have a good day.